Hi everyone, my name is Neil Venkatraman and I'm a staff therapist in the Couples and Marriage Family Therapy program here at the Family Institute at Northwestern University. I am part of a team of psychotherapists specializing helping couples and families at different stages in their relationships create pathways to greater understanding and connection. As a couples therapist, I'm experienced and specialize in helping and specifically addressing issues like emotional distance, disconnection, conflict, financial stress, work-life balance, and so much more with couples. I've created this podcast series to help you navigate through some of the challenges as a couple that you may face on your journey. Today, I'm going to be talking to Emily Clear. Firstly, Ms. Clear is the director of the Couple Services Group and part of the clinical leadership team at the Family Institute. I have the privilege to say that Emily is also my direct boss that I report to. And I'm happy to say that not only is Emily an amazing and great boss, but she's also a very caring and nurturing human being. I'm really excited to have her on the call today. Emily is also a teaching assistant at our Marriage and Family Therapy program for our graduate students here at the Family Institute. Today we're going to talk about how gender roles and power are shifting within a marriage and how this leads to couples navigating through a non-culturally normative place in their marriage. I think you're going to find today's podcast really useful. Welcome, Emily. So just to get into it, you have quite an interesting background, and I know this is a second career change for you. What drew you to this career and why did you make the career switch to a marriage and family therapist?
Sure. So a big part of it was I actually have a BA in psychology and history from Michigan. So it had always kind of been on my radar, but I just didn't feel like taking the clinical psychology route at that point in my life. So I went into a business career and had a pretty successful kind of run in my business career. But in my personal world, my sister and brother-in-law had a son born very premature who passed away. He lived 26 days in the NICU. And when they were going through the process of grieving that loss, I realized there was a lot of individual support out there and there was a lot of group support out there. But they had just one kind of resource available to them for couples support through the process. And so I'd always kind of thought of being a therapist and really seeing in my own family like the impact of, you know, my parents' relationship, the dynamics of multiple family members. So at that moment, I kind of started rethinking, like, I do kind of want a psychology career, but I don't want to do clinical psychology. Like, I want to do couples work.
Yeah, yeah.
And exploring what that would look like. And then while I was going through graduate school, I had a couple friends go through fertility treatment. So it started to become this whole notion of like difficult transitions to parenthood and wanting to work with couples who are having kind of challenging transitions. And so I was living in the Chicagoland area, found the program here at the Family Institute, and really felt like all the stars aligned. And then the surprising piece was after graduation, being able to kind of layer back in some of my business experience, as I'm sure kind of feels familiar to you too as a career changer.
Like, I think similar backgrounds, but sorry to hear about the loss.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really hard
to
hear. And so good to hear that this is kind of personal to you, like the loss, and then looking through your friends and families and relationships and feeling like it's a natural fit.
Yeah, it always kind of felt easy or organic, I guess would be the way to put it, versus a lot of my business career, I felt like a fish out of water. Like I was good at it, but it didn't feel natural. And now, even on a stressful day, I'm like, I like this. I enjoy this.
Okay, so Emily, what are some of the recent challenges or presenting problems that couples usually show up with you in a therapy session? What do they present with?
So I started, like I mentioned, doing a lot of difficult transitions to parenthood. But since coming back to the Family Institute almost 3 years ago now, I have ended up working with a lot of dual income couples. So I would say a large percentage of my couples currently are kind of struggling with this balance of work life, two careers, and not just two pretty intense careers. So I'm feel like I'm working with a lot of this like middle, I don't want to say age, but like middle stage couplehood. How are we navigating our finances? How are we handling our aging parents? How are we raising our children? How are we handling both of our careers and managing a household and feeling like we stay connected? I still do a lot of the transition to parenthood work, I feel like this is kind of something that's kind of percolating up. And then also a lot of female breadwinning couples. And so I've kind of feel like I've started to cultivate a niche around that area as well.
Yeah, so good to hear. And it's almost like the sandwich generation of couples in between managing their parents and having younger kids in the middle. What did these couples say, Emily, when they show up? How will they define or talk about their problem?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of it is communication. Like, I feel like a lot of people come in with the, you know, like the generic, like, we need help with communication we want to improve our fights. And I think a lot of times when we're unpacking communication, it's really kind of the symptom or catch-all for a lot of the other stuff that's happening, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do we actually talk to each other about our careers? And I think a lot of couples prepare to physically have a baby, but don't prepare for parenthood, and talking explicitly around, like, how did your family raise you? How did my family raise me? You know, how are we going to do this together? What parts of those things do we want to bring in? And I think a lot of it, too, when we're unpacking the communication, ends up in a lot of, at least with the heterosexual couples I'm working with, too, a lot of the female clients trying to unpack second shift mental load stuff that they didn't think they were going to experience in their marriage, but they find themselves kind of locked into those positions, too. Mm.
So I'm hearing a lot of communication as couples show up, work-life balance, parenting responsibilities, and maybe like lack of intimate time or intimacy is waning in the relationship. So in my experience, I find these problems are symptoms of something deeper underlying these couples' relationships. It's kind of almost like the iceberg effect. You know, you have this iceberg floating above water, but below it, there's some root causes of these presenting concerns, whether it's the parenting time or the dual income families that causes conflict and prevent intimate connections. From your experience, what would you say are some of these root causes or some of these problems that you currently see?
Yeah, I would agree. It's kind of feels like an iceberg, maybe like a conduit to the bigger, deeper issues. Mm. I think a big one I'm experiencing, particularly with my heterosexual couples, is it kind of trying to integrate where they think they are around their roles in the family and what's kind of more culturally like all the gender norms. And I think a lot of that gets exacerbated when you add kids in the mix. Like, they may have had a lot of parity and equality pre-child, but you throw in two careers, 1 to 3, 4 kids, and suddenly they find themselves slipping into like really traditional gender roles that they didn't expect or anticipate. And then I feel like a lot of times the other challenge is they end up not prioritizing the marriage. It's like we're parenting in a very child-centered era, and so they're constantly kind of, when they have a free moment, prioritizing the kids above each other.
So sometimes the kids, sometimes the chores, sometimes.
Right.
So it's almost, I'm hearing almost like the intimacy and connection time is deprioritized.
Or exactly.
Third or fourth in the priority.
I'm not sure if that's what you're experiencing too, but I feel like a lot of my couples, that's the thing they feel like they can put on the back burner. Like, I can't put my job on the back burner. I can't put my kids on the back burner. Yeah. I can't put like our house functioning on the back burner, you know, we'll make time for sex in 4 years. I mean, I'm being exaggerating, but like, you know,
I'm
like
being generous.
Yeah. No, true, it could be for some couples that good. You know? Then we really have our work cut out for us.
We probably won't have any clients in the conversation. But so I'm hearing gender roles, maybe power imbalance that shows up, and intimacy prioritization in the relationship. Emily, in your perspective, what prevents a couple from understanding these imbalances in the relationship? Most clients have a good sixth sense of what's going on. Obviously, they're very busy, but yet I find they're blocked from taking any action in their relationship. What do you think that's stopping them from working through these problems?
I mean, I think there's some of it's really surface, right? Like they just pure exhaustion, you know, like they just don't have time, which I can be empathic around as a working parent. But I think some of it too is this almost like they didn't think they'd find themselves in these kind of rigid old gender roles, or they find themselves in new ones without a script, right? Like with the female breadwinning couples I work with, they know what it looks like to have the father earn the money and be the one going out and spending the majority of time on career. They don't know what it means when it's the woman. And when the man, you know, vice versa at home, like when the man's doing the primary childcare stuff, even if they are both working, they're not sure what to do with those scripts that don't match up with either what they saw growing up or what our culture still kind of is indirectly, sometimes directly, still sending message-wise. They haven't taken the time to step back and realize, like, whoa, what does this all mean? How do we create a household that we feel connected and feels like it's still moving and running and being okay?
It's hard for couples to see this. Mm-hmm. They can feel it. They know that something is going on. They have this experience with their families.
Right.
And how they interact and show up. And now all of a sudden, showing up maybe differently, very progressive and very healthy, but it's different, and it's almost like an internal conflict, and they can't really see this difference. Something when we spoke about early on as well that you also mentioned is that, which I really liked, was this idea of self-actualization, that we are looking to be perfect parents, perfect employees, perfect role models. And we're looking to our partners maybe to fulfill some of those roles.
Absolutely. I feel like a big challenge in current, you know, marriages and even long-term partnerships is this expectation we have as a culture that the person we're partnered with is going to be our everything, you know, like our family, our best friend, our work mentor. But at the same time, they're going to be enhancing us. We've moved out of, I think it was Eli Finkel who proposed that idea in his book, All or Nothing Marriage, about self-actualization, that we move from like the love phase of marriage to the self-actualization and how much pressure that puts on a relationship. You know, I think one of the things I encourage a lot of couples to do is to recognize that their partner can't be their everything, to have friends, to have other family members that can provide support, to view work mentorship as park that over in your professional world, to make space for your partner to be who they actually are rather than need them to be everything.
So yeah, I like that. And it's almost along the lines of is that self-actualization may be constraining them or blocking them.
Yes.
From just showing up and being good enough.
Right. Or just recognizing like their marriage doesn't have to be this perfectly curated package, that it can just be the reality of, okay, this kind of sucks. You know, like we're tired. We don't go out for the glamorous dinner. Like we're lucky to like have a glass of wine and sit on the sofa together. Like, and that's okay.
I like that a lot. So if you wouldn't mind, I just want to tap into a little bit of this gender and power dynamic a little bit, because let's consider power and the role of gender in a couple's relationship. Is there a difference between the ways a millennial couple, say, versus a Generation X couple experience these imbalances in a relationship? And if so, like, how do they experience it?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. We're at this point in history, and I'm probably going to get the statistic not totally right, where millennial women are actually outpacing millennial men in education in different various areas, like a lot of professional schools. There's, you know, more women graduating from law school than men. And I think traditionally, again, like we know what it looks like when the man's the breadwinner and the woman stays home, you know, that kind of 1950s, 1960s model. And I think the hard part for a lot of Gen Xers and millennials are they were raised by parents that were in, even if they had a working mom, they had sort of more that traditional baby boomer like split of responsibilities on the gender line. And I think a lot of millennial couples I've worked with have come in expecting to have equality in their relationship and probably managing it pretty well pre-child. And then all of a sudden they have a kid, and again, they slip kind of into those traditional gender roles. And suddenly they're like, wait, how did we end up here? We were expecting equality in our marriage, and now we feel like it's imbalanced. And a lot of the women are reporting, like, I didn't expect I was going to have to do everything. And I think the hard part is a lot of millennial guys are showing up a lot more in parenting and other spheres of the household than they saw their father, like their baby boom dad. So they're like, well, wait, but I'm doing all this stuff that my dad never did. What do you mean you're still burdened with all of this? And I think it's really hard. I think especially millennials, they thought that the script had changed, and then they get into the reality right. of it, and they're like, right. we look kind of like our parents. Like, this wasn't what we signed up for yeah. in our marriage. Versus I think a lot of Gen Xers kind of, you and I are both Gen Xers, yeah. like, you know, like, yeah. we're kind of that cynical generation where we're like, well, nothing's going to work right. So I think for a lot of my Gen Xer dual income couples, I think a lot of the women just knew they were going to shoulder more of it mm-hmm. and kind of were, you know, like the baby boomers kind of laid the groundwork for dual income couples. Gen Xers kind of suffered through like the learning curves. And I think millennials thought that it was fixed. Mm. And so I think a lot of Gen Xers aren't quite as caught by surprise when the gender norms start leaking in, whereas millennials, I feel like, are really taken off guard. Like, what is going on here? This isn't what we signed up for.
Yeah. So it's hard to navigate sometimes.
Absolutely.
The sense of power imbalance.
And just helping couples, like, make space to talk about it, right? Like, power in our marriage looks different than power in maybe our parents' generation.
Yeah. Because I also like the concept that you discussed early with me was expanding the sense of self
mm-hmm.
in relation to experiencing this.
Right.
Yeah. Do you mind saying a little bit more? How do you do that?
Sure. So a lot of what I try to help couples recognize is that it's changing and like mm-hmm. how power is impacting each of them differently, like what it means to be the female breadwinner or be married as a guy, like unpacking some of our more toxic gendered messages, right? Like a lot of masculinity is caught up in the American culture and like earning power
yes.
and money and the status that we impart on some men around that. And so to be married to a woman who's making more money than you, mm-hmm. they may feel like on the surface both of them are okay with it, and they probably are, but to unpack some of the personal sense of self that happens for both of them to be in that moment. And if they feel like it's impacting intimacy, you know, I found that the majority of my couples where the female is the primary breadwinner, they aren't having as much sex as both of them are reporting that they want
yes.
to. And sometimes I think as much as they want to be comfortable with the difference in the gender roles that they're in than what our culture says they should be in, I think they really struggle. You know, I think a lot of women struggle to sexualize the guy who's taking care of the kids and making dinner at night. Even
mm-hmm.
though she loves that he's doing that,
mm-hmm.
she's having a hard time actually sexualizing him, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys feel, I don't know if they'd actually use this word, so it may be a harsher word than what they're experiencing, but I think they feel emasculated when they're not the one
yeah.
earning the majority of the income.
I'm seeing similar situations with my clients as well, and I think that's so appropriate. It's such an internal struggle
mm-hmm.
to find your role in the relationship. And I'm also finding there's increase in, when that role reversal happens, or that expectation happens, or the expectation is not met, that an increase in substance abuse. Like,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, I've noticed recently with a few couples that I'm seeing a lot more alcohol use.
Yes.
The legalization of marijuana in different states.
How that's contributing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but I think I would probably report the same thing.
Yeah, the dynamic is that there's different reasons why people drink, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera. You know, biological, family, not ability to manage stress. But some of the substance abuse now is showing up here.
Yeah. Do you feel like it's almost a numbing?
It's almost a numbing, but in some cases, I'm finding substance abuse and power linked. Where one of my clients, where in a heterosexual couple, the male feels like he can be more forceful, he can talk more, he can express himself, or even physically
yeah.
a little bit more aggressive, which
matches
up.
Yeah,
makes
like
him feel masculine in that moment.
Right.
Or bring that masculine energy in it, especially when he smokes. he feels that he can be a little bit more aggressive.
Which is interesting, right? Like, if he's not meeting that masculine definition of success through the financial provider, he's going to do it that other outlet that we have in the American culture of aggression and, like, physical brute force.
Yeah, to sort of balance out his role or to be demanding or some way, whether it's emotional or physically demanding. But, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of that too, exactly what you're experiencing. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, and I find that the other way I'm seeing it show up, especially with these dual income couples, is a lot more, and this is just my clinical experience, a lot more female infidelity. And often seeking out an affair partner who is, quote unquote, very type A go-getter guy, like that more stereotypical guy, when the husband has more of a softer, leaned into more of kind of old traditional gender female roles, you know, maybe the cooking in the household or the childcare person, point person. You know, I think a lot of those couples, the male ends up with, you know, struggling with some alcohol use too.
Yeah.
So I suspect those things could be potentially interlinked.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear that perspective and how couples are navigating that.
Yeah.
And how they look for solutions to manage that emotional distress in some way.
Right.
Not very healthy, but so interesting.
Yeah, that kind of maladaptive way to figure out what to do with the leftover gender norms of generations ahead of us.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious to see, because I would imagine the trend the millennials started with women outpacing men with education is going to carry into Gen Z.
Sure.
And that dynamic of that economic power that women are continuing to embrace out in the professional world is just going to continue to be part of what couples have to navigate. And maybe this is just my perspective. I think, you know, in the next 10, 20 years as couples therapists, we're going to see more and more female breadwinning couples trying to navigate how to come to terms with kind of new gender roles.
Mm. Yeah, that's so interesting. And it's interesting how it's going to affect intimacy in the relationship.
Absolutely.
And how do you feel intimately connected and have fantasy and make sure that the intimacy is maintained?
Right.
Emily, what, now that we got a sense of, you know, some of the ways couples show up and the underlying root causes of some of this and how it transpires, what clinical steps do you use or share with a couple looking to reconnect with one another after they present with this, right? Where would they start? What would be some strategies and tools that some of our listeners using on this call can actually just try out and see if it's helpful to them?
Sure. One of the big things I talk about, and I think I actually stole this from another one of our therapists on our team, Dr. Alexandra Solomon, who also is someone who taught both of us and teaches our Marriage 101 class.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure I stole this from Alexandra, that I often talk to couples about with the marriage being the executive branch of the family and reprioritizing putting power back to the executive branch and trying to be couple-centered versus child-centered, and how it actually indirectly helps the kids to have a strong marriage or partnership in the household. So one of the big things is I try to help them reevaluate how they can put their marriage above child time. And maybe that looks like reprioritizing the weekend so that it isn't just like child activity after child activity after child activity.
If you don't mind for a moment, so if a couple's got like four or five balls in the air throwing up, like how do they grab
one
that
or the
other? This is a priority. Especially, I'm just thinking out aloud, sorry, to a recent session with a couple with a child that's two years old.
Yeah.
3 years
well,
old.
So part of what I help them step back and recognize too is that I think a lot of couples, especially when both of them work, is they feel guilty that they don't spend that much time with their kid. And so when they get home, they make the whole world revolve around the kid, right? Like dinner's around the kid's dinner schedule, and they like sneak their meal in somewhere in between.
Right.
You know, then it's all about bath time and bedtime and all this stuff. And you have multiple kids, they might be in staggered bedtimes. And I think a lot of my couples report feeling like they have to like interact and be directly playing with their children at all times. I don't know if you've heard this a lot too.
Yeah. Very common, yeah.
And so a lot of times what I encourage them is, well, you can make dinner and have your kid play in the kitchen with you, and you don't actually have to interact with the child in order for the child to experience that as time with parent. And I think it teaches kids good responsibility. Like, we make dinner together, and I'm a huge advocate of kids having chores. So getting the kid to be involved with like setting the table or clearing the table off. So you're having interaction with your child, but it's helping you guys manage and run the household without feeling like we have to be 100% on with our kids. And then once they're bed, then we do dishes and then we do all the adult stuff, versus like you can do the adult stuff and the child stuff at the same time. There was a study, I think it was England, that they looked at kids and parents and like quality time, and found that kids reported quality time as things like running to the store, like going to Target with their parent. And I find a lot of my couples, especially couples that have a little bit more means, feel like they have to like go somewhere or do like go to a museum on the weekends or anything. Yeah. And so a lot of times I'm like, no, like your kid like just wants to go to Target with you. Like that could be quality time for your kid. Absolutely. Like, and the parent's like, well, that doesn't count. Like that's me running my errands. I'm like, but it does. And then when you're done with your errands, then the kids maybe go play in their playroom and you as adults have connection time, right? Like you could sit down with a cup of coffee, do something chore oriented together.
I like that.
Yeah, that's one of the big ones I tell. Yeah. And the other one I tell a lot of clients is to increase threshold rituals. We know from a lot of research that having those kind of rituals around connection points when you're entering or exiting space together help most couples report feeling more connected. So being intentional around saying goodbye before you leave for work, seeing if you could integrate a hug or a kiss on the cheek even, and ritualizing that point of like we're going to be in separate space or we're back in the same space together. And again, I think a lot of times with kids, when we get home, it's easy to prioritize doing a threshold ritual with your child, like stopping and hugging your kid for the day and leaving your spouse kind of off in the other room unattended to. So being more intentional about that too.
That's great. You also discussed for the couple themselves a cognitive intervention in understanding the roles and how they talk about their roles. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Sure. So a lot of what I try to help make space with couples is to think through how their actual marriage is functioning and who's doing what roles and how they actually could have maybe a little more parity. You know, I'm really big on talking to couples about parity versus equality, because it may never be equal. But if they're doing things that they feel good about contributing to the household and they're having a collaborative conversation, may not be that the woman's the best person to do the childcare. And talking through and unpacking with each other what it means to then have the guy have ownership of that, both internally within himself, that he's the better parent at doing that, but also how they talk about it as a couple and what may come up for them around shame or feeling good about what they do. So a little bit of it is helping them map out what they actually think they're good at versus what they feel like the outside world tells them they should be good at versus what really feels good about how they run their household and family and relationship together. And sometimes those things intersect and sometimes they don't. And sometimes we'll even draw like a Venn diagram, you know, like so they can see where it overlaps too.
It's almost like, you know, writing down the expectations and then the reality of the world.
Correct. Yeah.
Compared to the expectations and having a discussion around that.
Absolutely.
And seeing how they feel. So there's almost like the cognitive and then the emotional pieces. They don't feel good about it, or there's guilt or shame, whatever it is, engaging in that discussion with them.
And sometimes it's helpful to have them write down the expectations their parents had, unpacking the household they grew up in, because a lot of people feel like they shed it, but sometimes it's like internally percolating around, kind of influencing them too.
Emily, what research resources would you suggest a couple read to rebuild intimacy when they face with the situation? Anything that you've come across in your experience?
Yeah, some of my favorites, depending on where they are in their relationship. A big one, if couples are about to become parents or newly parents, I highly recommend Becoming Us by Ellie Taylor. Mm. And our Transitions to Parenthood team, led by Nikki Lively, is starting to launch parenting groups for it too. But she does a really great job of having exercises where you think through yourself and your internal transition to being a parent and unpacking like kind of that stuff we were just talking about, the cognitive, the emotional stuff attached to it. Another one I really love is Unfinished Business by Anne-Marie Slattery, or Slater. She talks about a lot of the gender dynamics that are changing. She has a great Atlantic Monthly article, too, about this rise in women becoming more breadwinners and how couples navigate that, and that it needs to not just be a shift with women and how women are conceptualizing it, but it also needs to be an expansion of what we allow men to do and men to be in the workplace and at home. And so it's a really great balanced book, in my opinion, around navigating dual income marriages and parenting.
Sounds really good.
And then we mentioned earlier, Eli Finkel's All or Nothing Marriage, I think is a great one too.
I often leave my clients usually with an index card.
I usually
write down a sentence or two on it, so something that they can consider to our next therapy session. If you were to leave our audience with a metaphorical index card or a billboard, what would it say?
Yeah, this is a hard one for me to reflect on, but I think a big one is I would advocate that couples really step back and ask themselves, what kind of narrative did they come into the marriage or partnership holding about what marriage should look like? And what are they actually experiencing as their marriage? Is there intersection between those two things, or is there a huge disconnect? I think a lot of times I found that we have a narrative that we're carrying or a fantasy, and when the reality doesn't match up, it somehow means failure versus an opportunity to actually co-create and collaboratively build the marriage you guys want. So probably doesn't fit on an index card.
I'm sure it's nice, small enough to make it.
Maybe we need the billboard.
Yeah, I love that. That's really great. And finally, how would someone who needs help in this area get more information or get into contact with you?
Sure. The easiest way would probably be my email address, which is my first initial E, my last name, K-L-E-A-R, at family-institute.org. Or they can contact our registration team and they'll be able to help connect people to me as well through my voicemail extension, although I'm much faster with email than voicemail.
And Emily, so what type of clients or what type of problems that clients experience that will be very helpful to give contact you?
Yeah. I think a big one is I do a lot of couples work, but I also work with individuals who are struggling with it, do a lot of difficult transitions to parenthood, fertility, as we mentioned earlier. I do couples considering adoption and like helping unpack that journey and that navigation. I do a lot of parenting work with couples. I'm pretty transparent. I don't work with children. So we have other fantastic resources
here to do
that. Like most of our conversations, a lot of dual income parenting, sandwich generation. I've kind of also helped a lot of couples navigate financial challenges in relationships. And then I think, as most of us couples therapists, help couples navigate affairs and infidelity too.
Emily, thank you so much.
Thank
this
you,
has
Neil.
Been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
Talking to you.
It was a great conversation. Thanks.
This podcast is brought to you by the Family Institute at Northwestern University, a nationally recognized leader in the field of behavioral health. We bring together the right partners to support children, adults, couples, and families across a lifespan. As researchers, educators, and therapists, we work with our clients and partners to see change. If you'd like to request an appointment, please call us at 847-733-4300. You may also visit our website at www.family-institute.org. And please follow us on Facebook and Twitter for relationship tips and tools and for updates of the new podcast episodes. Thank you so much for listening.